From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Just a heads up before we get into the show. We're looking at a quite sensitive topic today that may be distressing to some listeners. And if you've got kids listening especially, you might want to come back to the podcast a bit later.
Prior to getting married, my boyfriend and I found that I was pregnant. I was in the middle of a nursing course. He was studying engineering. I was a new Christian, and my parents weren't, so we were a bit concerned as to how it would look and how it would interrupt our lives. So we decided to go ahead and have an abortion.
This is Claire. She is telling her story in a video for Rachel's Vineyard. This is a retreat for women and men who have been impacted by abortion in some way. Claire and her boyfriend eventually got married and had 5 children together. But years later, she realised that the abortion was a major unresolved issue in her life. So she started seeing a counsellor who encouraged her to go to a Rachel's Vineyard retreat. And she liked the sound of it. She thought it might bring some much-needed healing.
I think there was a measure of relief because it had been something that had been hidden for so long, and I don't like things being hidden. As I heard other people's stories, it helped me to feel more comfortable with my own story and that I wasn't the only one grieving.
Abortion, of course, is an incredibly politicised issue, an emotive issue, and widely debated. It seems like everyone, from your closest friend to your head of state, has something to say about the right to life or the right to choose, or both. But often, hidden from view are the people who have been through abortion and how some of them, both men and women, really struggle with the decision they've made. This struggle can involve depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress and grief. These are intense emotions, of course, and all are typically endured in secret.
I spoke with the founder of Rachel's Vineyard, Dr. Teresa Burke, when she was in Australia to run a retreat, and she was quick to point out that her organisation is not political. The focus, she says, is to provide a safe, supportive and non-judgmental environment for people to process the feelings they have about their experience of abortion and to find something like restoration and healing. But first I asked her how she came to this area of work.
It actually began when I was in graduate school, and one of the first assignments that I had to do when I was working on my master's degree in counseling was lead a support group for women with eating disorders. My patients were anorexics and bulimics, and the subject of abortion came up one night by a girl named Debbie who was having flashbacks and nightmares to what she had suffered. And she said these images and memories were painful enough, but that her ex-husband would call and leave messages on the answering machine where he called her a murderer. There was another woman in the group that said, "Your husband is a horrible man," and everyone nodded. And she said, "I had an abortion and it would just kill me if someone kept reminding me about it." And then there was another lady that got up and she started cursing and swearing and saying, "We have a right to control our bodies, and to hell with anybody who would try to make me feel bad about it." And as there was another lady that actually got up and left the room, slammed the door, and we could hear her car screeching out of the parking lot. So this was like a bomb going off in my group. So I really went to my supervisor because I'm a student and I had to share everything that happened. And I was telling him about the conversation, and he leaned in and he shook his finger in my face and he said, "You have no business prying into people's abortions." He said, "Abortion is a private, personal thing, and I was instructed not to bring it up." And I said, "But I didn't bring it up. Debbie brought it up. She's having nightmares. She's having flashbacks. I think she has post-traumatic stress disorder." And he said, "That's a psychotic reaction caused by her medication. And FYI, if someone's having that as a reaction to medication, it's an adverse effect, and you should probably stop it immediately." So to me, it was a forbidden grief. I left that support group and I started the first therapeutic support group for healing after abortion for women and men who had unreconciled feelings, repressed grief, pain, sorrow related to the loss of their child.
So there are some really horrifying and kind of heartbreaking stories in there. But as you say, it's strange that, you know, for something that we sort of talk about as a culture a lot, you know, particularly in the US, there's always the pro-life, pro-choice, it's a very heated debate. We don't talk very much about the actual experience for people who've had an abortion. Why do you think that is? Is there still a stigma around that? Or is it that, you know, we just want to treat it like a medical procedure and therefore it doesn't need to be talked about?
Well, I think people's experiences of abortion are very powerful. They're very deep. They impact on central key roles of maternal identity, your concept of yourself. It's usually surrounded with secrecy. It's not something women talk about casually like they would that they're going to go get a breast implant. And if there's a bad job done or a botched surgery, because of the shame that I think a lot of women do feel, it's not inherently experienced as an empowering act. It's something that they just don't want a lot of people to know. And as a result of that, their feelings that accompanied that procedure or the pressure or there's so many conflicting emotions. And then there's the loss of a child. So some people might feel like it wasn't a good time. And you can have a delayed reaction as well to the stress of that. A lot of women report after an abortion, they feel relief. They feel relief that it's over. But as life goes on, they're reminded and there's triggers in the environment of, you know, even a child could be a trigger. Seeing a child that's the age of your baby could be a trigger. The struggle with infertility down the road. You know, we do so much to, you know, prevent pregnancy and then look at the millions that's spent when you want to conceive. Any of these things down the road, if you can't have children, it's very devastating for people when they want them. Mm. And that working through that grief, a lot of women who go on to have children, maybe that's the time when they're exposed to fetal development. As they're cradling their newborn becomes a trigger to past unresolved grief. When they see their baby on the ultrasound, these things would normally be so exciting and marvelous and mysterious and wonderful. But when there's this unresolved pain behind it, it kind of moves forward at the time that you would be celebrating the birth of a child and becomes a place of a lot of conflict.
Is it some women, most women, lots of women who have these later reactions?
It's hard to say. All we can say is that some women do have very big reactions. The data of the suicide rates, the depression, the anxiety, the medical health issues is really pretty staggering. And I know that when I teach in hospitals, people who are dying of cancer, when I'm in the hospital, they come over and they say, this issue is everywhere. So you might be able to feel comfortable with your decision until you're on your deathbed, and it's something people really want to reconcile. So it's very hard to just categorize.
We often think of this as a women's issue, but you're very clear that men can be affected by this trauma as well, aren't you?
Well, it's a relational issue and it happens in the context of an intimate relationship. So when there's troubles later, it's going to impact one's sexuality. You know, if they have had a death event that's associated with sexual pleasure, it kind of twists that. Men who don't have a voice in the SAG are very traumatized. You know, like I said, there's a lot of men who pressure women to have abortions, but there's other women who, you know, men are grieving their lost fatherhood. They would have loved to provide and protect their child. And this is something that's a human instinctual drive that we all have. And when that has been broken, I think it diminishes one's sense of their own humanity. And we know that it leads to patterns of violence and battering because there's all this unresolved grief. I talked about the traumatic expression of fight or flight, and we can certainly see that.
You're listening to Life and Faith. Natasha is partway through her interview with Dr. Teresa Burke, the founder of Rachel's Vineyard, which is a retreat for people who've been affected by abortion. But first, here's Kathy with a bit of her story. She runs one of the retreats in Texas, but she was a participant first.
I remember walking out of the abortion clinic thinking, why don't I feel better? You know, I should feel relieved. And I was just like, I had a huge hole in my heart, or a huge hole in my body. Just an emptiness that I can't explain. And it's like, that was like the start of my nightmare. which I suffered with for about the next 30 years.
Do you have a sense? I mean, a lot of people would say that the reason that people, if they experience guilt or shame or kind of traumatic responses to having had an abortion in the past, that that's because they've been told that it's wrong and shameful, whereas actually a lot of people think that, you know, the fetus is not a child and there's absolutely nothing wrong with abortion. So what's your sense of, you know, where that guilt and shame comes from for those who experience it?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, and I can tell you one first out is that the rates of sexual abuse for women are really high. 60% of the people coming on our retreats have histories of sexual abuse. So that is one piece that I think is never included in the discussion. The other thing I can tell you is that I said I think it's a human issue, because there's countries where Rachel's Vineyard operates where it is not politicized at all. There's people who believe in New Age theologies, which means that it's not a baby till you say, yes, I accept you, you know, and yet they still have all the symptoms of grieving. They have the repressed pain.
So in response to this massive not spoken about problem, you started Rachel's Vineyard, and you wanted to start a program that sort of moved away from talk therapy. Is that right? Why is that?
We know now from neuroscience that for victims of trauma, that when they go to speak about their painful traumatic issue, whether it's war or abortion or abuse, that from brain scans, you can actually see that the Broca's area shuts down. This is the area that does speech. So, and people are likely to come very physiologically aroused as they even look or hear about their trauma. This is where the fight, flight, fear, freeze modes of trauma come in. So what is needed is a sensory-based treatment, and we use a lot of ritual to help facilitate grief work. Rituals that don't need language, because it's very hard. So there's a lot of things in Rachel's Vineyard. We use music. There's a lot of props that you touch and you feel. This keeps a person grounded. So we're calming and soothing them with breathing and meditations and spiritual access to the life of their soul. We call it a therapy for the soul. And we're also dealing with death. And isn't that when we light candles and there's services? And regardless of your faith, there'll be a candlelight vigil after a tragedy, because people are looking to to have a spiritual experience that someone, God, AA, your higher power, you know, it can contain the magnitude of what you're feeling, so somehow can get outside yourself. The other thing is the community experience, a healing community of gathering with others who understand what you're feeling, who aren't going to laugh it off or tell you it's not real or, you know, condemn you for what's happened. So we just needed a safe place. But I think the sensory-based treatment, I know that that's why people have such a powerful experience of healing.
You spoke a bit about the spiritual element to this journey for people. And I mean, there's more of a recognition in medical sciences generally now that there is a real spiritual aspect to health, and that's really important. So do you feel that the church has something unique maybe to offer in this area?
I think that all churches do, because they're a place where people go when they're hurting and when they're in pain. And I believe that our program incorporates elements of Judeo-Christian stories, that people place themselves in the context of those stories so that they can be part of the passion, you know, that, because in a cycle of, even in nature, you know, you have winter, spring, summer, fall, and our lives have that same kind of a rhythm. Mm. And in a Christian framework, you would have passion, suffering, and then you'd have an experience of death, like nature, and then an experience of resurrection and new life. So learning to pattern your sorrows, your griefs, your losses, whether it's abortion or the death of a child or someone killed at war, that you've got to find hope in the context of profound human misery, suffering, heartache, and a way to find meaning. You know, people aren't the way we could be to each other. And so when we go to heal a loss that makes us feel rage or anger, it's a softening of the human heart that makes us better parents, better friends, better workers, better husbands and wives, and that's what's needed because the world's kind of crazy right now.
That's Teresa Burke from Rachel's Vineyard. From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Simon Smart and Natasha Moore. If you or someone you know is experiencing any trauma or distress after having an abortion, we strongly urge you to seek support. In Australia, we have an abortion, grief and pregnancy crisis hotline. Their number is 1300 363 550.
Rachel's Vineyard, that's Dr. Teresa Burke's post-abortion retreat, operates around 100 retreats a year in 84 countries, including Australia, and 37 languages. For more information about that, the website is rachelsvineyard.org.
And if you're looking for more conversations like this on important, if sometimes hard, issues, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. Next week, an African-American scholar on civil rights and his own personal experience of racial hatred, tragedy, and forgiveness. It's a powerful story. I hope you'll join us then.